Truth over tribe. This is the Jerry Vader Show.
...840-1360-97.5 WTAQ News Talk Sports. I just got this email like just now, like 2-3 minutes ago. Never Trump 101. Morning, Jerry. Another example of how to recognize a Never Trump narrative. Biased reporting. Will Trump authorize release of the memo? Factual reporting. Will President Trump censor the congressional memo? I would say he's got that exactly backwards. The Congress and presidency are co-equal branches of government. The Intelligence Committee memo is a work product of Congress. Congress wants the public to see their memo. The presidential censorship of a congressional document should not be taken lightly. This story is not simply, will Trump release the memo? Yeah, but they can vote to if he doesn't. My understanding. No, he has the authority to release it. If he unconstitutionally invoked that authority, that would be something different. Anyway, more on that. I actually do have thoughts on that. Because the House Intel Committee did vote to release the Nunes memo, but not the Democratic response or rebuttal. I want to get into that a little later. The belief is, a source tells me they likely will, but I have some thoughts on that. First, this. This is not intended to criticize. I want to be very clear on that. This is not intended to criticize. This is intended to point out that if you ever make a mistake at work or have a bad day, you're not alone, okay? It happens here. I have to say, oh, I stumbled over that, didn't say that right, actually that I had that information wrong. These things happen. We're all human beings. And what I have found to be a valuable weapon in the last year and a half is the ability to recognize your own fallibility and to laugh at it when appropriate. And if you're me, there's all sorts of appropriate occasions to laugh at it. Earl, and I mean this as a compliment, you're good at laughing at that when things happen to you. You're very good at that. I think that is the mark of a joyful, happy person. Self-deprecating humor, I think, it's life. Now, I unfortunately used to be one of those people who took myself way too seriously. And I can screw up with the best of them. I fixate and focus on this because, and again, this is not criticism, and I know I'm going to be accused of bashing, and I'm not. I subscribe to the Green Bay Press Gazette online. We get the weekend papers with that, okay? So I get, Earl, the top five morning headlines in an email, which I just almost dropped. And then I would have had to have bent over and picked it up, and Earl would have had to play a bumper while I do that, but that didn't happen. So here's your daily, hi, Jerry, you know, and they use your name. Hi, Jerry, here's your daily top five. Packers okay with Bass Pro Shops buying Cabela's. I'm like, that deal hasn't closed already? Thinking, really? Then the second story, attorney, Mayor Schmidt won't be sentenced Wednesday. I'm like, what? What? What did I miss? What is Jim Schmidt being sentenced for? Story 3, Earl, Russ Feingold discussed the Senate race. Are you getting an idea of what's going on here? All of these stories are from October 3rd, 2016. And they link to the stories from October 3rd, 2016. Now, again, here's what's interesting. The front page, so they show that you and I have a similar theory, Earl. The front page shows today's paper. It does, in fact, show, or I guess actually it's yesterday's paper. Oh, that's where you may be right, Earl. This front page is yesterday's paper. Ah. Earl's theory is, did they miss the deadline? Here's what I'm suspecting. Is whoever pushes out this newsletter or whatever you want to call it, this morning update, uses the same template over and over and over and over and over again and just updates it, except when they don't. That would be my theory. I have been guilty of similar transgressions. I know that somebody's going to say I was ripping the newspaper. To the contrary, mistakes do happen. That's actually going to be a leftover topic for later in the show. Didn't get to it yesterday. Mistakes aren't fake news. They're mistakes. This isn't fake news. It's wrong news. It's not news. News from the past, I think we call history. But it's a mistake. Somebody's having a bad morning, I'm guessing, and when they discover this happened, shouldn't be the end of the world. But if your morning started off with someone pointing out to you, hey, yesterday, or you just walked into it. I haven't had one of those where I just walk into a buzzsaw in the morning. Earl, have you been lucky in that regard? Where, yeah, I mean a big one, you know, where someone's waiting for you. Where you can, in your head, you can hear the Dragnet theme. Dun, 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 dun. One of those. Now, so consider yourself blessed. All right. These things just happen. Let's just, the drip, drip, drip to me. Like, Bass Pro Shops buying Cabela's. I'm like, holy cats. That announcement was made some time ago. They haven't closed that deal. And then, as you might guess, it caught my attention. Attorney Schmidt won't be sentenced Wednesday. Now then, I'm like, what did I miss here? And then when we have Russ Feingold talking about the Senate race that he lost in November of 2016, then it all kind of came together that, oh, that's not today's news. All right, speaking of today's news, there's a story that, actually, there's several stories, and I want to try to, I want to do my best to get some things we didn't get to yesterday. And that is, I had mentioned the debate over Confederate monuments. And the Wisconsin State Journal did what's called an advance story on a meeting that's going on tonight. Let me just read a little bit of this to you, just so you get what's going on. Although the debate over Confederate monuments has faded from national headlines, it will soon reignite in Madison. On Tuesday, the city's Landmarks, Park, and Equal Opportunities Commissions will conduct a rare joint meeting to create a plan for two Confederate monuments that have rested in Forest Hill Cemetery on the west side. After violent protests involving white supremacists left one person dead and more than 30 injured in Charlottesville, Virginia on August 12th, Mayor Paul Soglin ordered the removal of a 1981 plaque, and this is a little complex, at the Confederate rest section of the cemetery and asked the commissions to consider options for the plaque and a larger 1931 stone cenotaph installed by the United Daughters of the Confederacy and still at the cemetery at 1 Speedway Road. The options include permanently removing the monuments, leaving the monuments in place but altering their messages, leaving one or both of the memorials in place, but erecting a new monument, providing details of the false narrative of the Lost Cause movement and the role the monument played in the effort. The Lost Cause movement, the resolution says, seeks to alter history and to paint Confederate soldiers as heroic figures rather than rebellious traitors on the wrong side of history and humanity. In August, after the Charlottesville incident, Soglin said he expected communities to put a sharper focus on the history of memorials erected decades after the Civil War, which he said came amid efforts to promote white supremacy and the subjugation of blacks through Jim Crow laws or black codes. The mayor said he prefers leaving the larger monument in place, erecting a new one next to it, explaining the history and nature of the United Daughters of the Confederacy, and discarding the plaque, which Soglin says has no historical value. That's the 1981 plaque. For me, I'd favor just removing them and erecting something simple there that would inform the public of what was there before, City Council President Marcia Rummel said. My commitment is to reparations, and taking down these monuments in public places is a small part of that. So she actually supports reparations. Efforts to reach someone of the United Daughters of the Confederacy unsuccessful. The organization's website describes one of its aims is to collect and preserve the material necessary for a truthful history of the war between the states and to protect, preserve, and mark the places made historic by Confederate valor. 9 days after the Charlottesville incident, the organization's President General, Patricia Bryson, issued a statement denouncing white supremacy and seeking tolerance for Confederate symbols. We are grieved that certain hate groups have taken the Confederate flag and other symbols as their own. We call upon the people to cease using Confederate symbols for their abhorrent and reprehensible purposes. And then they talk about the Confederate rest site at Forest Hill. What happened was, in 1862, some 1,200 captured Confederate soldiers were moved to the nearby Union Army stockade at Camp Randall. But Camp Randall was ill-equipped to serve as a prison camp. Prisoners were relocated to Camp Douglas near Chicago in July of 1862. Still, 140 of the Confederate prisoners being housed at Camp Randall died of disease or wounds. The soldiers were initially interred in a mass grave at Forest Hill, eventually given their own headstones there, in an area now known as Confederate Rest. In a nearby plot, 240 Union veterans were buried. The city still owns and maintains the grave sites and monuments there. So, in 1982, the city allowed a small monument to be donated and erected just outside the Confederate Rest section. It describes the men buried there as valiant Confederate soldiers and unsung heroes. The privately funded plaque, which rested on a granite structure, said the soldiers were buried in the Union state after surrendering in a battle and dying at Camp Randall as prisoners of war. The plaque celebrates what was already by then understood to be fatally flawed interpretation of the Civil War, a critic says, one that moves the crucial issues to one side in order to celebrate valiant and unsung heroes. The plaque was actually removed back on August 16th. It's currently in storage at an undisclosed location, and the city wouldn't even allow the Wisconsin State Journal to photograph the plaque at its current location. I've just given a lot of thoughts to this. Now, the 1982 plaque, I'm not sure where that came from in 1982. So and they pretty quickly took that one away. One of the proposals that I've heard about this, you know, when you talk about removing these things, is to put up a historical explanation rather than try to erase history, give it context. I really lean in that direction. For example, you know, I've shared my experience of being in Selma, Alabama, and there's there's a memorial to Nathan Bedford Forrest, founder of the KKK. That's beyond comprehension to me. But if you make it a historical monument and then have information there that explains the atrocities and that the KKK is a terrorist organization and a murderous terrorist organization, that's putting history in context. Also, when we were in Alabama in 2015, there was renovations going on at the state capitol, and governor's portraits were removed for that renovation. There was debate over whether George and Lurleen Wallace, both of whom served as governor of Alabama at one point, or at different points in time, rather, should not be restored. They were governors of Alabama. If you want to put their tenure in context, that's fine. But to suggest we should pretend that they never were, and I think that is a danger here. You can put history in context. Erasing it, I think, is a danger, and an unintended danger. Trying to shovel the Holocaust down the memory hole. It just, it doesn't work. So I think that is something to bear in mind as we look at these things. Can a soldier display valor in fighting for a wicked cause? Which slavery was. And don't get me started on the Civil War wasn't about slavery. I get very frustrated when people try to do that. The states' rights involved was slavery. And Earl, you're going to see three or four emails. No, it wasn't. That's not it. Yes, as a matter of fact, it was. That I think it's like the works of Samuel Clemens, Huck Finn, removing the N-word. That's whitewashing history. Here's a more nuanced one. Pretending when you have a period piece movie set in the 1930s or 40s, and pretending that everyone didn't smoke. Do you know that was a criticism of Mad Men? That it showed all of those people smoking? That was a big, guess what? A whole lot of people smoked back then. In fact, there's a whole story arc around the 1964 Surgeon General's warning and how it impacted their ad agency. What a lucky strikes I think they had. Was their one cigarette in Mad Men. But you just can't pretend that that stuff isn't there. I thought a lot about this. I think what you need to do is explain, be willing to fully explain. All right, speaking of context and full disclosure, the House Intelligence Committee's decision last night to release the memo, I don't know that it needs any more explanation than that, does it? But at the moment, will not release a Democratic response. I may or may not start with that. I've got so much stuff to get to this morning. A whole lot of leftover from yesterday, a whole lot of new stuff. I may hit the ground running with that at 9:06. I want to talk about a political stunt with deep Wisconsin roots taking place at the State of the Union tonight. We've done a couple of pieces at Media Trackers on that, and just whatever. I'm going to try to plow through a lot today. I'm not saying we aren't taking calls, Earl. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying I want to plow through a lot. so you get to juggle those bowling balls. It's 9 o'clock.
News, talk, sports.